If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, welcome to the show. What can I tell you? Pair jailed after 1.6 million euro wine heist at a high-end restaurant in Spain. A court in Spain has sentenced two people to 4.5 years in prison after the theft of 1.6 million euros worth, 1.4 million pounds worth of expensive wine from a high-end restaurant in a heist that made headlines around the world. That's very sophisticated, isn't it? Mm-hmm. The BBC have just screened this amazing drama called Gold, haven't they, starring Hugh Bonneville.
It's so good.
Well, I think it's good. I mean, some of the sniffy Sunday TV reviews didn't like it so much, but I thought it was great as well.
We haven't finished it yet, but we're deeply enjoying it.
Well, you know what happens. I mean,
I don't know.
It's a true story.
I know it is, but I don't know the story.
All right, you don't know this. Okay, fine. Sorry. I apologise. But, I mean, you know, the team, if they've just finished on that one, and, you know, generally real people loved it. Well done, the BBC. Well done, everybody involved in it. You know, this is your next one, isn't it? I mean, you know, what a heist. I mean, it's still against law. It's still not a very nice thing to do, of course. But, you know, it's just, I don't know, there's something anti-hero kind of anti-hero romantic about a wine heist.
Yeah.
You know, knowing their I don't know. Yes.
No, leave that one. It's a 1960. We want the 58, please.
How many bottles of wine do you think were involved in the 1.6 million euro heist?
Ooh, so I think they're going for quality over quantity.
Okay, yeah.
So
good thinking. You're very warm. Very, very warm. In fact, you're hot.
Thanks. Like 1,000.
1,000. That's us.
I'm going to go fewer than 1,000. I'm going to go 800.
45.
Oh. What? What? 45 bottles?
Yeah, suddenly, it's probably not got a series in it.
Yeah.
Maybe it's got
Where are they going to sell them
to? A half hour after the King's speech, rather, on Christmas Day. Well, nobody anymore.
No.
It would seem. There's a fantastic documentary on Netflix, isn't it, about wine faking. And it's true, isn't it? It's a true story. Oh, what's it? It's what literally one of the greatest things you will not believe the endeavour and the industry this guy goes into, A, faking his life as a wine expert, and B, then able to fake wine and to con the greatest palates in the world as to whether this is genuine, like, you know, world-class, you know, premier cru. What's it called, Mira? It's called Sour Grapes. It's on Netflix. Have you seen it?
No, but it's a great name.
Well, when you finish Gold, watch Sour Grapes. Have you seen it, Vass?
No.
Oh, it's like, oh my God, I'm so glad. It's Tuesday. We were recommending something for the weekend already. Sour Grapes this weekend. Watch it and you can thank me later. Easter Egg Tasters wanted no yolk. Aldi's advertising for people to take on new jobs as Easter Egg tasters. When kids hear this kind of story, they just don't believe it. They think it's grown-ups, you know, grown-ups encourage it. Look, don't worry, might not like school, but look, when you get when you can see the light, when you were like 15, 16, 17, 18, you know, there are jobs like this out there in the real world. They're thinking, no, they're not. This is just made up. Apparently not. The supermarket says it wants to employ 3 chief Easter egg tasting officers to make sure its range is up to scratch. Its advert states this role is open to all applicants of all ages across the nation. The only criteria is a love of sweet treats.
Oh, well, okay.
It's a bit sus because the Easter eggs have been on the shelves for ages and now they want to sell a few more, so they're advertising this job. But it's got us reading. Look, we've just mentioned Aldi and Easter eggs. Fill your boots. Aldi, we fell into your trap.
Do you think Easter egg tasting is like wine tasting? Like, you have to spit it out after you've sort of eaten a bit?
Have you ever spat chocolate, you know?
It's quite difficult.
Well, it's very gobby, isn't it? Yeah. It's like chocolate-coloured gob, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it gives it a real... I mean, if you want to... It gives you definitely more range.
Oh, yeah, no question.
They go further. There's no question about that. I mean, you know that.
Yeah, oh, totally.
The more weight something has, the more momentum it has. And you've got its own...
A cherry stone is the absolute king of what to spit.
Excellent. All right, back to the future. Cars will run on batteries powered by everyday items you have in your kitchen cupboard within 10 years. Cars will run on batteries powered by baking powder or sea salt within 10 years, scientists claim. They believe the Bake to the Future plan, that's good, isn't it, will replace the standard lithium battery. It's funny, isn't it? Because Back to the Future is a musical at the moment, isn't it, in the West End? They're very clever, aren't they? I mean, who would think? How confident have you got to be in your craft to think, we're going to take the Back to the Future franchise, add songs, put it on stage and people are going to love it. You go, no, they're not. And they do.
Yeah.
My kids went to see it with their grandparents and they absolutely loved it.
Yeah. Snow sweeps in northern England from Scotland, with more areas set to be blanketed. Could even plummet to minus 15 degrees over the next few days. I got to tell you, it is warm. I know Rachel doesn't think so, but you feel the cold a lot. But I ran in today across London, and obviously, you know, I'm running, there's activity going on, but I was really, really hot today. It's not, but it's coming down. We've had pictures from people's back garden sent to us. A lady from Aberdeen. Oh, where is it? You've got to see this. Is it Justin? Here we go. Yep. From Frances Nabley. Look at that. That's her garden furniture this morning. You know when the snow falls, because nobody's messed with it, it sort of stacks up and you can see the shape of everything in your garden, but obviously everything's 6 inches bigger than it should be. That's Frances' garden. That's coming our way.
Snow.
Okay. I'll give when it arrives here, I'll give you that.
Thanks.
Okay. Somebody's been stretching early this morning. Here we go. Laura in Whitstable, up and easing back into the running with an extra long stretching session after a nasty fall the weekend. I'm hoping to make it around in one piece today. I was stretching a lot yesterday. You know, every time I stretch, I love it. I've never stretched enough. I've now been stretched by Rachel, my wonderful physio. But I think not for everyone. Definitely not for everyone, but for many, many people, stretching is a bit like defrosting the freezer. You only do it when you absolutely have to, and then after you've done it, you think, why didn't I do this before?
Yeah.
You know, maybe you could combine the two. This just in from Joe Biden.
I may be 80 years old, but I'm sharper than a steel blade and vibrant enough to outsmart the best tech geniuses around. Look, I was the one who helped pass Obamacare and the assault weapons ban, and I'm not going to let anyone question my intelligence or clarity of judgment.
Just from Joe Biden.
That doesn't sound 100% like him. Is that from some sort of...
It's actually not Joe Biden. It's AI Joe Biden.
Yeah,
not far off, though.
I thought it was Joe.
I thought it was, too. No, and I think you just suspected it was AI.
No, there was a tinniness. There was something to it.
Really?
There was something to it that wasn't quite...
Let's play it again. This isn't Joe Biden. This is AI Joe Biden.
I may be 80 years old, but I'm sharper than a steel blade and vibrant enough to outsmart the best tech geniuses around. Look, I was the one who helped pass Obamacare and the assault weapons ban, and I'm not going to let anyone question my intelligence or clarity of judgment.
Okay, here's the real Joe Biden.
I've never been more optimistic about our future.
Yeah, it's a bit more throaty, isn't it?
We just remember who we are.
And a bit more sleepy.
We're the United States.
See, the AI's too awake.
The AI's pronunciation is too crisp.
I sort of wish the AI was Joe Biden. I mean, that would be a cool thing to say. I did this, and I'm
the president of America is a robot.
I'm sharper than a whatever he was, and yeah. Just, you know, come on, Joe.
By the way, the real Trump isn't AI. But my favorite thing about Trump is I discovered over the last 24 hours is that the big MAGA hat, the Make America Great Again hat, he used to wear that on bad hair days. What I want to know is what does he consider a good hair day? Yeah, so Donald Trump used to wear the MAGA hat because, you know, of the phrase, you know, make America great again, because it cut through, it had some traction, it landed, as they say. But also, you know, it was a great insurance for a bad hair day, because sometimes there just wasn't enough hair lacquer in the US for him, you know. By the way, who am I to talk? Mary said to me this morning, she went there, said, had a haircut? I went, no, just bit more fallen out over the last 20 years. She said, oh, I discussed it with everybody else. I didn't know whether to say it to you or not. And it's like, you know, the lady looks pregnant on the bus, or your friend looks pregnant. Do you say it once, you get it wrong once, and you never say it again. But you have to feel that pain. And it's the same with my hair. Bruce Springsteen, Dancing in the Dark. Do you think he ever thought about running for president?
Oh, we'd vote for him, I think.
No, but do you think he ever thought about it?
I think you get a vote, Vassos.
No, but people would vote. I know what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, he can be more effective doing what he's doing, can't he?
Bruce Springsteen or Tom Hanks?
Yeah, well...
Or the Hanks Springsteen dream ticket.
Oh, my goodness me.
Who's president? Who's vice?
Tom Hanks, president.
I still want
Bruce Springsteen for the parties.
Okay. Dwayne The Rock Johnson to become president. Because I think he might. Schwarzenegger would have done it, wouldn't he? He would have become, because he was halfway there. He was governor of California, wasn't he?
I don't think he's allowed because he was born in Austria.
I know, that's why it didn't happen. Well, thank you for clearing that up. But yeah, I think Dwayne The Rock Johnson might. I think he might do it. I think he might do it. You know, the last theatrical person, apart from Donald Trump, was Ronald Reagan, wasn't he?
He was an actor.
He also wore a hat when he was on the campaign trail. He used to wear a cowboy hat.
Yes.
Yes, he did. He wore a cowboy hat. Lots of Americans think that Boris Johnson is still our prime minister. They actually do think, because he cut through more. They just think he's still the prime minister. And they think he parties, but properly parties, because they've seen him and they've seen Partygate headlines and they think he's just a party animal. And that's a bit outrageous for us, for UK citizens. And they think, he's been caught. He's been having another party. They have no idea it's to do with lockdown. Because you wouldn't, would you? You know, you see a picture of him. You see some headlines on some news shows of British papers, like we see US headlines, you know, for a second or two on Sky News or whatever. And they just put two and two together and they go, oh, there's their wacky... They think he's a bit like Berlusconi. They think he's party-party. They have no idea that it's to do with, like, you know, a bowl of pretzels and some warm beer that basically saw him become the ex-prime minister because of him breaking lockdown. They don't see... They have no idea it's to do with COVID. They went, oh, he's a bit of a laugh. And his hair's always dishevelled, probably because he's pulled another all-nighter because he's the partying prime minister. They still think he's our prime minister.
That's extraordinary. But you sort of get it.
I completely get it. Of course. 100%. Right, Jared in Norfolk says, my alarm is the intro to Steve Wright in the afternoon. Da, 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 da. I wake up every morning to the classic drum roll. We always have this ready just in case. I don't know why.
Oh, and you get a round of applause to ease you into the day.
Coming up, the old lady, Tim's going to be here. We've got the factoids, non-stop oldies. Oh, don't you miss him? I miss him. Radio 2 misses him, that's for sure. Yeah, and that's nice, isn't it? Good morning, Steve. I know you listen sometimes. Rachel says, what is Vasis's nice, peaceful alarm sound called? It sounded fantastic. It's called Never Wake Up Again, You Might As Well Be Dead.
It's called Ease Your Way Into the Day. It's the one that comes...
It's not an alarm. It's a beautiful piece of music, but it clearly doesn't work. Where is it? 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 In one. Thank you. Don't wake up. Stay asleep. Miss out on your life.
By now, I've usually turned it off, but sometimes... All right, I'll just leave it for a bit.
Forget about your wife. Don't wake up, you haven't got a job, you haven't got a life. You stay in bed, you sleepyhead, because you haven't got a life. It's beautiful, it's not going to wake you up, though, is it?
Well, my old alarm we've also got in the system, which used to be in the shape of a cow.
Yes.
Have we got that?
Uh-huh.
Because that's the opposite.
Wake up. Don't sweep your life away.
See, that's more like... Was that Arnold again?
Sorry?
Was that Arnold Schwarzenegger?
No, it was the cow.
Hang on a minute. You were there was a moose reading the news in Zootropolis, but it was you. Mm-hmm. You can still be a cow and be Arnold Schwarzenegger.
I don't think in this case.
I like the combo.
Wake up. Don't sweep your life away.
That's definitely Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Poor Caroline.
That's what he did when he became the ex-governor of California. He went and did that instead.
Voiced alarms.
Yeah, why not? Why not? I think it's cool. This is going down. I've got my urology appointment today to sort out. Well, to see if they can sort out my issue with just needing to just go to the loo all night, but not in the day. So maybe it's a psychological thing. Psychological trigger thing, or maybe it's the inversion of
lying down,
and the water coming back from your legs into, you know, you being the where you your center of gravity not being where you need it to be. But my new mattress, which is much more level, doesn't seem to sort it out.
I think it's when you're lying down, doesn't your prostate sort of pushing your bladder a
you
bit.
You leave
that's
my
why
prostate
I think
out of this conversation.
I think it's that.
But I had my prostate checked last week by the masked finger. You know this.
Yes, I do.
I had an internal examination. Mm-hmm. It went very well. Very, very. It was our first date with a new doctor, but we went all the way. What can I say?
Yes.
And then I had some blood tests, and they all came back on Friday. I've got slightly high. Do you know what happens when the blood tests come back?
What, you mean you get it all on your app?
You get it on the app, but do you know about the colour coding?
No.
So you get all the metrics and all the markers, right? But if anything's above what it should be, it's in red, and you're just drawn to it straight away. So there's like this really binary black and white thing. And then there's some red numbers. You go, ah!
What were the reds? Cholesterol.
Cholesterol, LDL, and all this kind of stuff. I've got them here. I'm happy to take you through them. But you see now the red on a blood test email. It's equivalent to the klaxon alarm in the morning. You don't need it. You don't need it. And by the way, it turns out that my markers, the ones that are above normal, one is 0.1 above out of 5. So it's 5.1. It should be 5 or less, right? But it's still in red.
Yeah.
How about amber or yellow?
Yes.
Or just like slightly like not black, you know? So, but not red, unless there's something after red, but you don't want that, do you?
No.
But it's red. It's like, this is the Red Cross, like in the war, you know, on the front line. It's like, it's red and it's medical. Ah!
And yes, and presumably 5.1 would be the same red as 104.
Chris is no longer with us. Well, I heard he had his test back. No, he had a heart attack when he saw the red on the thing. Yeah, his bloods were fine, but he'd had a cardiac arrest because he's reading his... He's just... Ah! There's nothing wrong with them. Slightly above. All right, a couple of clips here for you. So, Beer and Walt recorded this alarm. This is actually Beer and Walt recording an alternative alarm. If you want this, we can send it to you and you can make a donation to, I don't know, Comrade Relief or something like that. Was that in a skit? It was, wasn't it? Did we film that? Was it on Instagram? Okay, and this just in from Dwayne The Rock Johnson. This potentially we are hearing is his first soundbite from a campaign effort to become the Democratic nominee for the White House.
You're about to smell what The Rock is cooking.
All right. Trump only wants to get back in for the presidential Diet Coke, which you get as a stipend, and all the pens, because he loves to give the pens away, doesn't he? He's running out of pens. That's what he's doing. The bloods from my test last week. By the way, when you're at a certain age, is there an MOT that you can go and do? Because I've talked to my friend about this. He's very clever. He's a very clever man. He started off as an optician, as an optometrist, and he is now like unbelievably successful, whatever that means, in various businesses. I mean, like, you know, sort of Sunday Times. He's on the list. He's very high up on the list. And I said, what do you think? Because he's also very good at looking after himself and things like that and his family. He's always got time for people. You know, he slices time really finely. You know, I was in London at the weekend and he just happened to text me when I was literally outside his house and I live 35 miles away. I said, you're not going to believe this. You must have sensed our presence. We're outside your house. He said, are you coming in? I said, no, we're not that outside your house. We're like 200 yards down the road, literally 200 yards down the road. He said, oh, you got to park here because there's no parking around there. I said, it didn't even occur to me to knock on your door on a Sunday and say, can we please park in your drive? Anyway, so we went to see him for a cup of tea afterwards, he and his lovely wife. The lady who can't pass a driving test, one of the cleverest people I've ever met. 7 times, Rachel. 7 times she can't pass a driving test, including the last time, which she signed up for a residential course in Margate, 2 nights in a hotel, guaranteed pass, still failed for driving on the wrong side of the road for most of the test, which she'd never done before. She'd failed for basically everything, and I think that was the one thing on her list she hadn't ticked. Maybe now that she's failed in every aspect of driving, surely if you fail on everything, doesn't that give you an automatic pass in a weird way?
I think
maybe. Haven't you thrown all the bags of sand out of the balloon and you just rise towards the heavens automatically? Isn't that what happens there?
Do you think maybe if you fail more than a certain number of times, you shouldn't be allowed to sit again?
Maybe. Paul O'Grady did that amazing programme, didn't he? With people like my friend who just couldn't drive. Do you remember?
No.
Oh, it was massive.
I'd quite like to see that,
It was. You thought, that's not going to sustain a series. It was huge on BBC, like 10, 12 million viewers. What was it called? There was Celebrity Driving School as well, but then I think he just did driving school with members of the public before that. And it was like, you watch it, you think, nobody can be this bad at something most of us can do quite easily. But of course, why wouldn't you? It's like having driving dyslexia. You just can't do it. Sending kids to school who have this challenged by this particular condition, as Eli, our second youngest son, was. You know, we were sending him to school every day to do something he wasn't programmed to do. He did not have the software to do. He does now because of this genius lady and her company. We're going to get them on, aren't we? We're going to get them on to talk about the Key Clinic in a couple of weeks' time. Anyway, my friend Ian, so he said, you know about all this stuff. I said, can I just go somewhere for the one fits, you know, all MOT, you know? Because I've had these bloods done to do with various things, you know, and you can get like, oh, a set of bloods for this and a set of bloods for that. And then, the judge's scores are in and all this kind of stuff. And do you know what he said to me? He's so wise. Do you know what he said to me? He said, Chris, the thing is, yes, you can. And it's useful up to a point. But the more you look, the more things you find. And you get to a point where that it's not useful anymore unless you've got symptoms. You know, the more you look, the more you find. And he says there's a point where it becomes unhelpful. And I'd never thought about that before. And it completely made me take my foot off the gas. Do you know what I mean? Interesting, didn't
you? I like it.
Well, I like him. He's an absolute genius. Anyway, here we go. So everything normal apart from, in haematology, MCV, right? Comes up, you can see it. Look, it's red on the results.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that is quite alarming, isn't it? Because there's a lot of black, there's a lot of numbers,
sort of stands out.
A lot of categories, there's a lot of sort of blood lanes, if you like, all in black. And then there's three red in red, and you go, oh, it's in red. I mean, literally, you know, your blood pressure goes through the roof. And then you look at haematology, MCV in red. MCV is in red, the letters are red. 101.1, average 80 to 99. I'm like 2.1 over out of 100. And it's in red, you know. And this—it's either black or it's red. There's no in between, you know. Can't they have a word with the Met Office? Amber warning.
Yeah.
You know what are these? What is the calibration of those warnings? Do we know?
I think it's just amber and then red.
Well, I'll take amber and red. I'd like more
some
nuance.
Some sort of differentiation.
Whew. MCH after MCV on haematology, also in red. Okay, 34.0 is my reading. Acceptable average 27.0 to 33.5. I'm only 0.5 out. It's in red. If it was 100 over, three times what it should be, it would be in red also. That doesn't work for me. It's like a red light. A red light, you know, to stop. You know, going, maybe stop. You know, stop-ish. No, stop.
Yes, actually stop-ish. Stop.
Actually stop. And then we go to cholesterol. Cholesterol 5.4, generally 5.4. Optimum 5.0, again in red, you know. LDL cholesterol 3.5, should be up to 3.0. Non-HDL cholesterol 4.1, should be 3.9. Again, just 0.2 over. All in red. It's all in red. It's very, very, very alarming, that was for me. Very alarming.
But actually, all great.
No, not all great. Still work to be done. So what I then did was I investigated, you know, how does one reduce one's cholesterol, right? And I'm not going to... The top five ways you reduce your cholesterol are basically how I live my life. I'm like, okay. And there wasn't a sixth. So the five things, that's how I live. It's like, well, how do I reduce my cholesterol? You know, it's like to nip and tuck things, you might need a pair of scissors. I don't have scissors. Right, I'm out of scissors. My scissors are blunt. So I think I'm going to go for it now. I should get the list out. Number one was exercise more. Number two was... I can't remember actually, but there were the five things, the way I live my life.
Well, I had exactly the same because, you know, I did the sort of 360 degree test last year, well, which Caroline got me for my birthday, and my cholesterol was high, and then he went through the things, and I went, well, I do all of that, and he goes, oh yeah, but you're Greek, and I went, yes, and he goes, well,
rude.
Because you know, it's often Mediterranean men have this thing, and it's called beta thalassemia, and it's fine. And so that's just going to be fine. So that's just sort of where your healthy cholesterol
right,
is.
Thanks.
But it was still red. So yes, I think it's fine.
Do you think you might be Greek, Chris?
Maybe you're Greek.
Oh, I'd love that. That'd be great, wouldn't it? I'm not hairy enough to be Greek, I don't think. I can't find the top five things, but literally the top five things. It's what I do when I get up in the morning till I go to bed at night. I'm like, okay, well, I can't.
Well, well done you, because imagine what it might be if you weren't doing those five things.
Yeah, well, thank you very much indeed. Six Nations come in again this weekend. Is it the finals of the Six Nations final?
Penultimate weekend.
Penultimate weekend. I do love the Six Nations. Very much looking forward to the Six Nations. It makes me more excited about the weekend. And I have lovely weekends anyway, but I'm more excited about them because Six Nations. Man gets some ready by getting intricate six-pack tattooed on his stomach. There you go. It's like when you get to when they're dishing out the Marvel Heroes fancy dress outfits. Mm. If you get Superman with that sewed in six pack, it just makes you feel good.
This does.
That works, doesn't it?
Not really. But what's that at the side?
What?
What's that white bit at the
That's
side?
That's him. The white bit at the side is him. It's like those dresses that you can get.
Figure
hugging dresses,
clever.
Which are white around the midriff,
yeah.
And then black like a sort of hourglass,
they're
and
amazing.
It makes you look unbelievable. What do they call those dresses?
There's like the bandage dresses, which are the really, really skinny ones. But that is just like the silhouette. It's just very clever pattern design.
Oh, this is unfortunate. Mum covers her car with spray paint after mistaking it for vinyl cleaner.
Oh, whoops.
What? Why was she using vinyl cleaner?
To clean the car inside of the car.
Oh, I thought you meant the outside of the car.
No, to clean the inside of the car.
Oh, no. Yeah. What colour is the spray paint?
Not great. Silver on black. I mean, she's stuck with it now, to be honest. This is interesting. Harry Styles sends One Direction fans into frenzy wearing T-shirt of bandmates before deleting it. Double tease, Harry. Double tease. But it works. Finally, for now, here we go. Koala climbs up stunned worker's leg at petrol station. Do we have the audio of this? An Adelaide service station attendant was stunned when a koala walked behind the counter and tried to climb up his leg. Aww. Mike in Hampton says, I had an alarm clock which sounded like R2-D2. I thought that was Radio 2-D2 then. Trauma. Sanskara. Which is bad enough, but the fact it was on wheels and drove off the bedside table, so you had to chase it to turn it off, made it very effective. That's not what happened. I don't believe you.
That's hilarious.
It is hilarious. It may well have driven off, but it didn't drive off, so you had to chase it. Because it would have smashed.
Well, because preceding the cow alarm, I had a baseball alarm and you could throw it over the side of the room and the impact would stop it. But then 5 minutes later, it would be on the other side of
the room
and it would go off.
Where did you
again.
Get it from?
Selfridges.
Did you buy it yourself?
Mm-hmm. Both the cow and the baseball.
You went to Selfridges to the novelty alarm club section and treated yourself.
Yes, twice.
I love that.
Separate occasions.
I love that. We always bought all the teams. Do you remember those digital alarm clocks for Christmas? Do you remember that? I don't remember that. No, it wasn't pre-you. Well, I guarantee it wasn't pre-you. Doesn't matter. No, but they weren't original. You know these sort of clock alarms, clock radios. You know that one. Like it, and they were all in the style. They were all the same. They weren't original. They were retro. I bought them at Christmas. They were like, you know, in what's it called? Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
You know when they click down?
Oh, yes.
And then Sonny and Cher comes on. Mm. It reminded me of that. I love those. I love those. I might get a new alarm now that we're talking about it. Because, I mean, the problem is your phone can do everything, can't you? So your phone's sort of taken the fun out of your sort of late night, drink and purchase episodes. Because it's all on the phone, isn't it? In fact, the phone now, you can buy things on the phone mostly that you don't need because of the phone. The phone has dumped itself out of the game.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Let's have some calm, shall we? A calm mind is a useful mind. No calmer mind than our next guest. So, big intro, and then we'll chat about how we came to meet each other.
I'm going to sing a bit of the intro. We met him in the bar on Thursday, asked him to the show on Monday, and now we're making Chad on Tuesday. He's the inspirational recruitment guru we had the pleasure of meeting at the big charity bash last week. He used to drink and smoke and eat meat, and then one day decided to not to. So please welcome the clean living MD of the CV. It's James Smith.
Good morning, James.
Good morning.
So we met last week at the My Black Dog Mental Health Charity Day, didn't we?
We did.
We had a high old. It was great fun, wasn't it?
It was a lot of fun.
It was the most fun. So many nice people. You know, I know that we had a table. I knew that we were hosting a table and people had bid to be on a table. Little did I know it was the longest table in the world, wasn't it?
It was a long table.
Thank you for bidding and it was great to meet you. We got chatting and I said you should come on the show. And I wasn't yanking your chain and now here you are.
Indeed.
So first of all, that's how we met. Yeah, then we got chatting. What do you do for a living?
So I own a recruitment business. We recruit executive assistants predominantly in London, but also around the world. Pretty much for kind of celebrities, sports stars, ultra high net worth individuals, that kind of right hand person.
How did you get into doing that?
I fell into it. Sort of started out in investment banking type recruitment, and then one day there was a specialist role that came in and they went, you can have a go at that, and then 23 years later I'm still here.
You don't look old enough to have been doing anything for 23 years, let alone, you know, a job, even being a person. You look so well, we'll get onto that in a moment or two, because that's sort of why you're here to have a chat. Generally, so you run a successful company. What does that mean in terms? What does success mean in your world? What does that mean to you?
So for us, I think it's about, I think, overcoming the challenges. Often we're trying to find needles in haystacks. You know, the type of people we recruit, there technically is lots of them on paper, but it's trying to find that sort of special fit between a principal or a boss and a person that's their right hand.
Now, I know there are some names you can't talk about aloud. Are there any names you can mention?
Yeah, I think one recently you had her as a guest on the show was Roxy Nafusi, the author of Manifest.
Yep.
So she got to a point in her life where she thought that she needed more time. And the kind of people that we recruit are the people that ultimately give you back the one thing you can't create more of, which is time.
And how would she find out about you then? How do your clients find out about you?
A variety of different ways. In her situation, we were actually going to book her for an event.
Right.
And then we realised that she was looking to create an executive assistant. So we had a conversation and we came up with a deal that she was going to do an event and I'd recruit her an assistant.
So hang on, you do events as well?
Yes.
Interesting, yes. Mr. Bond. Dun, dun, dun.
Indeed. So ultimately, in our line of work, we also try and help assistants be better at their jobs. So there are lots of kind of soft skills, emotional intelligence, resilience, those kind of things, which definitely help an assistant be a better assistant.
All right. So 20 odd years ago, you started off in banking and then you sort of fell into this. What was the first day in your first office running your own business? You know, where was it? How many, was it from home or what? How many people were involved?
Floral Street in Covent Garden.
Right.
With a great view. And it was literally kind of, what have we done?
Who's we?
My wife and I.
Right.
So we've been married all the way through the whole duration and continue to work together. So yes, 19 years this year. And it sort of was really back to basics. It was kind of calling people, sending out information, following up, chasing up, and eventually it just kind of connected.
So who was your first, not employee, what would you call them? Because your clients are the people that you find people for.
So they would be candidates.
Candidates.
Yeah, so
sorry.
Clients.
Clients and candidates.
Yes.
So who was your first candidate and who was your first client and how did they get together and how much did you get paid and all that kind of stuff?
So in terms of our first ever candidate, within our own business, she was called Stephanie.
Right.
And we placed her in a specialist commercial interior design company based at Waterloo.
Right.
And that was, I think, through a referral through somebody we'd met who went, actually, I'm not right for this job, but I know someone who might be. And then we met and we kind of put the two together.
So can people send you their CV then?
Yes.
How do you get candidates?
For us now, a lot of it comes through from referral. I think after the amount of time we've been doing it and the success we've had, it's kind of on a sort of referral basis. in terms of people would just go, oh, I think they're the people you need to work with. Right. So it kind of becomes a bit specialist. I mean, we do advertise roles, but we typically try not to.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking to a guy last night on the West Coast of America who sells cars. And, you know, we were talking about this car and, you know, I said, you know, is it what you say? He said, look, I know where you're going with this and I completely understand it, but let me tell you, you know, selling cars for us is not the problem. It's buying the right ones. So believe me, if we bought it, it's a great line, whether it's true like or not. But it's not dissimilar. That's not dissimilar to what you're saying, is it?
Ultimately, very similar. I think, you know, certainly when you look at the role of an assistant, lots of tasks would be the same.
Yeah.
You know, so whether you're working for, I don't know, a very famous entrepreneur on the West Coast, right, or whether you're working for an accountancy firm in London, the job on paper is technically the same. You know, you're helping someone be organised, you're helping them with their schedules, you're helping book meetings. But the context of that job is very different.
I get it. It's so fascinating. So can you give anybody listening tips on how to hire the right person?
I think take time. I think it's to look at the person. So we have a saying we always use, it's not what you do, it's who you are.
Right.
And I think, you know, that's really the key part. I think a lot of people buy skills. It's always the same thing as, like, you know, well, I always use the example of luxury brands. You know, they don't sell product, they sell brand. So it's about that kind of taking the time to learn about that individual in terms of where they're at in their life, what their aspirations are, and then asking yourself kind of very honestly, is, you know, can I offer them that?
Yes.
And I think if you can start on the right path, like today, then there's a good chance that that would work longer term.
And what about candidates? You say never underestimate the power of a CV, a good CV. Tell us about composing a good CV. What does that mean?
So a CV, I think for me, it's about trying to get behind as much as you can the person. So again, you know, you go back to the tasks, kind of most CVs for us look very similar. But every now and again, you'll find those bits where you start to learn about the person's character in terms of maybe what they do outside of work, kind of what their interests are. That kind of gives us an indication as to kind of potential suitability.
And what about how they look? Because, you know, that can be very pejorative, but it can also be very telling, can't it? Because my son was writing a thing for his little speech challenge competition, and he thought it would be quite ironic to do nonverbal communication as a speech topic, you know. And if you research that, it is, you know, you never get the second chance to make a first impression, whether it's visually, audibly, or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I think we definitely have, over the last couple of years, had to adjust that slightly. I think we've obviously moved to a more virtual way of interviewing. And I definitely feel that some people come across better on camera than others. Mm-hmm. We had a client recently where we had a candidate that we thought was going to be amazing. And we met them on Zoom. And I just had hesitancy. And I just wasn't, I didn't get that feeling that you kind of need with certainty to phone the client and go, you have to meet this one.
Yeah.
So we basically agreed that I would jump on the train, go and meet them for a coffee that evening, walked in, and within about 10 seconds, I was like 100% fantastic.
So which bit was missing on Zoom?
I just think some people don't maybe have that warmth. I don't think, you know, obviously on Zoom, you're kind of looking at yourself sometimes.
Yeah, and it's off-putting.
I think from like a generational perspective, some of the sort of younger people who've maybe grown up with social media, taking pictures of themselves, they just seem to be a little bit more comfortable.
And what about the reliance and reliability on older candidates? Is there a market for older candidates?
There is. I wish there was more.
Tell us about,
you know,
that.
Ultimately, I think, you know, that the whole experience piece in terms of knowing what they're doing and bringing a degree of certainty. I think with people who don't have that experience that want to transition into a new role, there is an element of risk. You know, you can say you can do it, you think you can do it, but actually having that certainty of knowing you can do it is often, I think, underrated.
Yeah, and if it becomes a choice and you don't need to do it, a lot of young people need to do it or don't need to do anything else so they can give their all to it. And it's because it's funny, isn't it? You know, when I was younger, they talked about key man policies when I had my own companies and things like that. And they said, you know, if you are going to sell, then we need to tie you into a key man policy in case you don't want to work here anymore. And I said, well, why wouldn't I want to not work here anymore? But then as you get older, you think, no, I just want to be at home with the children. You don't actually think that's ever going to happen. You don't think, I'm not that person. You think, other people are like that, but I just love work. No, there'll come a time when you think something else is more important.
Yeah, it's ironic. We actually use you as an example, which is quite funny, in terms of some of the stuff, in terms of probably somebody that works because they love their work.
Right.
And it's very evident that that comes across.
Right.
So, yeah, that was just
told
an example.
Told you, Mira, I do love this job. And it comes across. Good, that's good. None of this is why we've got you on. This is the backstory. Can you believe this? It's so interesting anyway, and none of this is why we got you on. So you have to sort of, because you're high end and you know you deserve to be high end and you've got where you got because of all you've done and all the hours you've put in, all the heavy lifting you put in, you then, you know, the sort of expectation is very, very high, I would imagine, from your clients for you supplying the right candidate. Are there any fail safes? Do you get to a certain point where you can never not fail, I suppose. But are you at a point now where it's almost guaranteed and that's sort of what they pay you for?
I would like to say yes.
Good for you for not saying yes.
I think ultimately there are some clients where, you know, they will sometimes maybe pick the person that you think, I'm not sure whether you've gone the right way, but ultimately you have to trust them because they obviously know themselves.
And you let them know this is your choice now.
Normally we would let somebody know within their team, perhaps. Right. We wouldn't necessarily tell them themselves. Okay. That, you know, we think that maybe they should have gone the other way. But I think also what that does give us is learning. You know, and ultimately what we're trying to do is we're trying to create an image of that person. So, you know, often we don't deal with the person directly. We'll work with a member of their team. It's kind of secondhand information. And then you start to put the pieces together and you see maybe questions they've asked in interviews and you start to get a bit more insight into the individual.
Right. And we won't say any of the names out loud, but these are like world famous household names that we're talking about here. Not that that makes any difference, but obviously these people have to be uber private. They have a lot at stake, as many of us do, but maybe more than most one would imagine, depending on a sliding scale of what people might want from you without necessarily admitting they have a side hustle or an agenda going on. Do you find that when you get it not so right, I can't believe you ever get it wrong, but you know, when things are a little bit, you know, oh, this is a 9 out of 10, you know, actually that's interesting, out of 10, where does it have to be before you, it can't be a 7, 8, 9, it's got to be a 9.
I think it depends on the person who's hiring, you know, whether or not they're prepared to, you know, start to build a relationship with somebody and it doesn't instantly connect.
Right.
How patient are they going to be to establish that? I mean, we always say it's a bit like a personal relationship. You know, some of the best relationships in the world start with a coffee. I'm not really sure whether they're my kind of person. And then suddenly 20 years later, they're married. You know, sometimes that happens. So it's down to their expectation in the very beginning of how fast they want that to connect.
Got it. Got it, 100%. Have you discovered that when things are slightly off or end up a bit off, there is a recurring common theme?
For us, I would say it's probably a mismatch in expectations.
Right.
You know, maybe they're not truly understanding what the role would entail. And we've, you know, they've told us one thing and then the reality when you walk in on, you know, day one, day 10, day 20 is actually slightly different. And again, it's down to, I think, how committed they are to find a resolution.
And have you ever had any issues hiring people yourself? Do you ever go to anybody? Like, therapists go to other therapists, don't they?
So there is an area of recruitment where they specialise in recruitment people.
See, that is so cool, isn't it? There's always a market somewhere. Yeah. And one that's called for, I would imagine.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, ultimately, I think, you know, they're doing the bit at the beginning where you're getting the CVs, you're looking at the person on paper, you think, oh, they could be OK. And then every now and again, there is an absolute rock star potential.
Right.
And they're the ones that you would pay the invoice for.
None of this is why he's here. Just one more question before we get into why you are here. If you could share with us, and by the way, ask me to unask the question. I'm very happy to unask it, really, genuinely. What is a head in your hands moment for you in this field?
For me, I think it would probably be, people going to interviews and maybe saying something completely random. You know, we do a lot of work within, we have one that sticks with me for many, many years. We had a role working for a very high profile fashion designer and they walked in and the opening line was, I have a passion for fashion. And you're like,
well, if that's as bad as it gets.
Yeah, well, no, that one to the person in question was like, well, that's it. It's finished.
I know, but still, I mean, seriously, that's okay with me. I know that, you know, you live to fight another day, but that's fine. Okay, so the reason I've invited James in is because he says, listen to the show, loves the show. And then he told me this story about this one day in lockdown. And this is the story. It's only going to take a minute or two, but it's just a great story. Off you go.
So I woke up one day. and decided that that was the day that I would become the person that I probably thought I was on the inside. And maybe up until that point, hadn't lived a life that was reflective of that. So, yeah, I'd had, I think, probably a couple of glasses too many of wine the night before and woke up and went, right, today is it. And went in and told my wife, today's the day. And she said, today is the day for what? And I said, today is the day it all stops. And that was drinking, smoking, meat, coffee, everything.
Now, they say you should never do that. They say you set the bar too high. This is the opposite of tiny habits. This is sort of earthquake moments as opposed to tiny habits or atomic habits. So you just woke up one day in the middle of lockdown.
Yeah, about a month into the first one, yeah.
And something somewhere triggered something inside you. You said, that's it. Today I'm going to give up everything that's bad for me. Everything on the same day.
Yeah.
And you did. And how long did that last for?
It's still now.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. 4 years on.
No.
Three years.
Nearly 3 years.
So you gave up everything on that. That was it. Boom. No cigarettes, no booze, no partying.
Nothing.
All over.
Yeah.
Yeah. I see that. That's the story. There's no real point. It's just like, what? And I saw you at the do, and you look like a man who'd given up everything that was bad for him. And you still do.
He was sat opposite me, James, and he told me that. And I was like, sorry, what? And meat, and smoking, and alcohol, and caffeine.
So, was there any cold turkey symptoms? Was there any bump? Has there been any bumps in the road? Any close calls?
Zero close calls.
What is that?
Zero. The only time
yes.
I sort of thought about it was in that kind of period in the lockdown where everything kind of opened up again. I had a meeting in London.
Okay.
And I think there's lots of, for me, I think I was probably a creature of habit.
Right.
So like certain places, certain pubs in London, certain kind of things would trigger certain feelings.
And it's
feelings.
Not addictive. I'm not trying to get you out of anything here, but that's not addictive behaviour, but it could be obsessive behaviour. And the two are entirely different.
Yes. And I still to this day think that it was, you know, I don't think that I had a dependency on any of those things. I think it was just a constant repetition of behaviour. So when I came to London on that particular day in lockdown and I walked past a pub that I had been in many, many times, and I thought, oh, okay, I feel that. And at that particular moment, two men at about 4:30 in the afternoon stumbled out and one fell into the road. And I was like, well, that's the universe telling me that's not a very good idea.
That's your higher power right there.
Yeah, straight away.
Oh, my goodness me. So there's no book in this because, you know, it's not... It's how I... Because you just did it. I mean, it's a leaflet.
Or a tweet.
It's not even a pamphlet, is it? I just decided to give it all up and I did. Boom. Yeah. Mic drop. Wow. Anything else you can tell us about it so we can get close to...
No, I think the key thing for me was, you know, there is, and it's definitely something we are working on at the moment in terms of how we can get it out there more for more people.
Right.
I think it's, you know, for me, it was a question of, you know, when people go on diets, when people give up things, they might feel a little bit better.
Right.
You know, but that takes time. Right. I often use a comparison of like that really expensive whitening toothpaste. You know, where you'll use it once and you go, well, it hasn't made any difference. But if you do it 90 days in a row, you'll start to see the difference.
Yeah.
So for me, it was a question of I was able to feel a lot better much quicker because I did everything in one go.
Wow. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it?
Everything everywhere all at once.
Yeah, you're way ahead of that. Multiple Oscar-nominated movie. And I presume, I've not asked you this, I presume everything just went vertical after that.
Yeah, pretty much.
Business doing all right, I would imagine, anyway.
During lockdown, not so much.
Right.
Which is how I came to be at My Black Dog,
right.
Was because we put together an event for people that were impacted by redundancy.
Oh, yes, let's mention this, your initiative.
Yeah, so during lockdown, obviously owning a recruitment business was probably one of the worst industries you could be involved with. And I think lots of people were giving up time. They were, you know, becoming key workers. They were helping people. And I was like, what could we do? Because we haven't got any work to do. And then the headlines started coming through in terms of, you know, people that were being furloughed and made redundant from their jobs. So we came up with an idea of the Great British Job Search.
Right.
And we managed to kind of get, I think, 21 guest speakers over 3 days through sort of lobbying them to help us. And that's how we then worked with My Black Dog, because they were kind of our mental health charity.
Brilliant, well done. And the Great British Job Search continues.
Not really.
We should bring it back. We should bring it back.
It was a moment in time,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, no, you're right. Okay. Brandon, you're I'm not going to argue with you. Jeez, you don't know anything that's bad for you. I mean, I thought I was pretty clean living nowadays, but he makes me feel scummy and dusty and dirty and 6 feet away from the nearest ditch. Jeez, James. Congratulations. Well done.
Thank you.
So cool. Talentsmiths.co.uk. What do you think, Rachel?
Amazing. I love it.
What do you think, gang? What a story, eh? Do you talk anywhere about this?
It's work in progress.
Well done, mate. So cool. Anything you want to say to people? Because we're over time. Anything you want to say?
No, I think I'm fine. I think I'm fine.
I think you're annoyingly fine.
All I would say is I think that one decision ultimately can change your life. Yeah. And, you know, you could make that decision today, and, you know, the legacy effect of that decision, you know, ultimately knows no bounds.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be a big decision, does it?
It could be really small.
Yeah, it can be really small. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Stay in touch.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.